Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show podcast. And I am really excited to introduce you to somebody who basically I just got introduced to, Carla Ondrasik. She is the wife of John Ondrasik, Fight for Fighting. We just did a podcast with John. But she's got a brand new book out, Stop Trying, The Life Transforming Power of Trying Less and Doing More. And if your first thought is Yoda, congratulations. Take a look at the first page of the forward on this. Carla, it is so good to meet you. And thank you for doing this. This is a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I know John adores you. I adore the show. And I'm so happy to talk all things Yoda and not trying with you.
Oh my gosh. You know, when I first saw the thing, he didn't mention it to me. We were in Houston together. I attended that keynote speech and, you know, I got the best swag I ever got, which is right over my shoulder here, which is that shopping cart. I don't know if you know
if you heard what I
said about the shopping cart. It's like, I never talked to John about his music because I always felt like I didn't want to be a creepy fanboy. The first thing I do after I get back from the show is just your shopping carts. I'm an odd guy, Carla. I'm just an odd guy. So, but yes.
The shopping cart's the cutest little thing in the whole world. And it's an exact replica.
I love it. I'm telling you, I love those shopping carts at HEB. Anyway, but he didn't mention the fact that you had a book coming out. And I didn't know that until I saw your tweet. And, you know, of course, he retweeted it, which is how I happened to catch it. With a great video, by the way. That introduction video that you did is just really so exciting and so much energy. And it was a lot of fun. And Stop Trying really just seems to be something that sort of hits me because I'm a world-class procrastinator. My wife will tell you this. She will be very happy to tell you that. And I think you're speaking to me as well as to a lot of other people in different situations, but certainly procrastinating, right?
Yeah, it's definitely a way to hide the fact that you're procrastinating. That's one of the reasons we try. We say, yeah, I'm going to try to do whatever it is, which really means you're not going to do it.
Yeah. She's discovered that in 31 years too. Yes. Yeah. So, it's not just procrastinating though. It's sort of, from the little that I've read of this, I'm a little ways into this. I've done one of the exercises, which I don't want to give too much away, but involves one's nose and index finger. It's really cute. It's a lot of fun.
We'll do it.
Everybody has a chance to do this. But I think that this is about, from just the little I've read, and you can tell me this before, and then we'll get into your background, how you came to write this book. But it's about self-sabotage to some extent. This is about spinning the wheels, maybe subconsciously just handicapping yourself so you can't move forward. And a couple of the anecdotes that I've already read in the book kind of hint at that. People who want to achieve something but just are in the cycle of trying, which puts them nowhere. Yeah. They don't move.
Yeah, yeah. And it's an unconscious thing. So we don't intentionally do this to ourselves. And that's the reason I wrote the book, is to really make it become something conscious. You can still choose to try, but I want everybody to know what that means and what they're not doing. So the moment that you say you're trying to do something, you're building in the intention and the possibility for failure. Because isn't that what trying is? Like, well, it may happen and it may not. So you're, in a way, you're putting failure in first place. It's like the second you say you're trying, failure is right there hovering over you. It may not happen. And that's the hesitancy. So we can talk about, you know, what does trying mean? So what we think it means is that we're doing. That's where we're unconscious. We think that we're taking brave first steps. So, okay, I'm going to try to do that. But it's not brave at all when you just dip your toe in the water, okay? Right. Trying is really the real meaning. It's not an attempt or an effort, as the dictionary says. It's a half-hearted attempt or an effort. It's, I'll maybe kind of sort of do it later if-ish, procrastinating attempt or an effort. And there are so many reasons why we do this to ourselves. And you know, you can start with the fact that we're taught to try. So I still try in my life. We definitely, it's ingrained in us. Our parents taught us to try our best and try harder and give it a try. So that's one of the main reasons that we try in the first place.
Well, that's really interesting too, because I mean, I can relate to that. And you know, in small things where this is probably not even an issue, you know, one of the big things with my parents was, you know, you have to try new things, like you just got, because this really just triggers memory with food, right? We would go someplace and it would be unusual food. And my parents would say, you have to at least try it. And if you don't like it, then that's fine. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I ever met food that I didn't like, so I don't think it was a big issue for me. Just the same. But yeah, that's sort of ingrained into us. So before we get too much into that, let's mm-hmm. step back a bit and talk about you and mm-hmm. talk about your life experience and what brought you to write this book. Because I think that from what I've gathered and from what John has said is that you actually do quite a bit of public speaking, sort of like, I'm trying to think of the right word for this. Well, Mel Robbins has got a blurb here, and that's the term I'm reaching for. And I can't think of motivational speaking. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, how it all started, I have had a very unique upbringing. I'm a gambler's daughter. My dad was a bad boy gambler on Long Island. And I think that I was put into situations at a very young age where you are thrown into the deep end of the ocean and you're going to sink or swim. There's no trying allowed. You got to get in the situation and get out of the situation, you know, and I did. And I chose, you know, I chose a really bright path instead of a darker path, you know. Right. I mean, I was very young and put in a state that I didn't even know anybody there. My parents weren't with me. And probably my dad was, you know, running from some trouble. And I just kind of had to figure it out. Eventually, they got back with me. But it was, you know, I've had to think on my feet a lot. And I've never employed a trying mindset. It's like, I'm going to do this. And then from there, I became very fascinated with success stories. How does somebody go from here to there? What was their journey? And I've always been interested in self-help because I'm a product of that. I'm a total survivor and a success story. And I'm very triggered by the word try. I hear it and I have a physical reaction. My kids were raised with, we're not going to try. And that doesn't mean that I expect them to succeed at everything. It means I expect them to give themselves the better chance at success by doing instead of trying. So I've been basically raised this way.
Well, sounds like you've developed this yourself. So I would say more credit to you. It's not really a question of being raised this way. This is a question of survival strategy and making sure that you chose a path where you could thrive. And you know, this is very interesting talking to people who you might call self-made, right? Mm-hmm. And I think you're very clearly that type of person, somebody who had to find alternate paths to get to where it was that they went. And I think that maybe you can tell me this because you've certainly been around a lot of very successful people, a lot of people who are in the middle maybe of their success story. Do you find that that's a trait of self-made people who had to take alternate paths to success, that they had to bypass that whole try and attempt mindset and have a strategy for solid commitment to action? Or is this just people who find enlightenment, whatever path it is that they're on?
No, I think it definitely helps you when you have to think outside the box. I was in the music publishing world forever. And if I went into that business in a trying mindset, I wouldn't have placed songs with as many people as I did or gotten on the records. You know, I mean, think about all the competition. So you have to think outside the box. And, you know, the figureheads, the presidents of companies, the CEOs, the chairmen, the great athletes, they don't get there by all, I'm going to try to send in a report. I'm going to try to close this deal. Their mindset is so rock solid doing And 100%, all of those people have probably employed many avenues to get to where they want to go.
Right. And again, this is a strategy for success. And this is what you're trying to teach people, is how to succeed, how to actually achieve. Yeah. Some of this is choice, too. I mean, before we get too much into the neuroscience of this, because there's a lot of really interesting aspects of this book, how much of this, let me rephrase this. Mm-hmm. How many situations do you approach or are approached with where maybe the issue is that people are afraid of success? I've known people who are afraid of success. Yeah. And who fall back into the, well, I'm trying to do this, I'm trying to do that sort of thing as sort of a defensive mechanism that prevents them from actually risking failure. It's easier to not try, or, you know, not do, I guess you would say, mm-hmm. Than it is to do and fail and deal with the failure. At least I think that's the defense mechanism that we're talking about.
It's in the book, actually. I dealt with this. So one of the reasons we try is because we are afraid of failure. Perfectionists, they have a hard time getting going. I'm waiting for the right, most perfect thing. So they tend to try rather than jump in because they're afraid of failure. You can also be afraid of success. It's a whole nother reason why you wouldn't jump into doing. Look, I've had a huge career. I'm 62 years old this year. I was so thinking, wow, I'm going to put this book out. I had to put this book out. I had to share this message with everybody. I put a name to what makes you successful. I really honed it in, and I'm so proud of it. But I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to start doing social media. I'm going to have to start traveling and speaking. And I am a behind the scenes person. I'm the star maker. But if this right. book goes, I'm going to be out front, terrified of the success. But you know what? My motivation, I think that's another key reason that we follow through and do something, is if we have a strong motivation to share whatever it is that we want to do or achieve what we want to achieve. So 100%, I'm a victim of the fear of success syndrome as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a real thing. And I think people underestimate the yes. fear of success, because success can be life changing. And look, I've had a couple forks in the road myself. I left a fairly comfortable corporate career, which I was doing well at, mm-hmm. to do what I'm doing now. Mm-hmm. And my wife was very supportive of this because she saw how much I love doing what I'm doing right now. But I mean, I had to leap without a net, and it wasn't a I mean, at that point, it wasn't a question of trying. It was, okay, I've left my job. I'm working from home. I used to tell people I give it a week before my wife kicks me out of the house. I need to make this success work right now. Yeah, I need to make it work. And it has. But that's a scary thing. And there were moments there where I was going, maybe I made the wrong decision. Maybe I shouldn't try. Maybe I should go back to what's safe. And I mean, I'm a small example of this, but I mean, I certainly have felt that, and it was.
Oh, I think you're a big example of it. You're a perfect example of it. You built in accountability. So when you say you're going to try to do something, there's no accountability. If you don't do it, who cares? Because you could have kept your day job and then said, well, I'm going to try to do this podcast thing. Zero accountability. So you built in accountability by going for it. And you also can't lean on any excuses or blame. You know, if you had stayed in your other job and said, I'm going to try to do this. Well, it didn't work because I didn't have enough time, right? Excuses.
Right.
Well, it didn't work because nobody at the company would let me have enough time to. So the minute you just go into do mode, there's no more excuses, blame, or lack of accountability. So you put yourself in the middle of the deep end of the ocean, and you've thrived and survived. There was no safety net for you. And I love that.
Well, I would tell you, I mean, I've had it go the other direction too, where I've played it safe and just decided this is not necessarily career-wise. And you're not talking about just career stuff in here. We're talking about, you know, personal relationships. We're talking about other goals in life. So tell us a little bit about that. I mean, how far, how extensive is this issue for people, this try without doing sort of thing?
It affects everything. And that's why I'm so crazy passionate about it. I'm not talking about semantics. Like, I'm going to try to pick up this piece of paper, okay? That's a small action, all right? The odds are I'm going to pick up the paper, right? Not trying, okay? It affects our health. Here's an example. We all have to go to the dermatologist once a year for cancer, melanoma. It's on the rise. So here's how a trying mindset can affect your health in a huge way. Well, I'm trying to find a dermatologist. I'm trying to find the right time to go. I'm trying to, you know, get enough time off work. I'm trying to figure out what the best, you know, whatever. If you keep trying to schedule that appointment, you might miss a life-saving diagnosis of a melanoma. So, you know, we try. I'm going to try to quit smoking, try to lose weight, try to lower my salt intake for my blood pressure. As long as you keep trying and relying on excuses, blame, and no accountability, you're going to stay stuck in not taking the action that you need. Okay. So health, relationships. Yeah. That it's huge. And relationships. I'm trying to spend more time with my kids. What does that even mean? You're going to pick a Friday and go out for pizza. And then next week you're back to the way you were. I'm trying to work on my marriage. Think of all the marriages that fail because they gave it a half-hearted attempt or an effort, not a full one. So there's a couple of examples.
Those are great examples. And I think to some extent these are all fear-based, right? I mean, I think we've talked about this already a little bit, but this is, there's a lot of fear, baggage, I think, that's coming into this. And I mean, I talked about that in terms of changing careers, but you talk about in terms of health, and I know a lot of people who won't go to the doctor or who keep saying, well, I'm trying to find this. I'm trying, you know, procrastinating going to the doctor because they're afraid of what they're going to be told. And, and I know this, even stupider, right? you screw up some sort of social interaction with somebody and you're embarrassed. Now, I'll tell you this, I have trouble with names, right? So what do? I don't try to, I try to get better. This is just an issue that I have to deal with. And rather than deal with it, right, I try to pretend that I'm dealing with it, but I tend to avoid the people that I have been embarrassed around. And I mean, this is, I just thinking about what you're talking about here, it's a huge cascade of all sorts of different things.
Yeah. So how would you get over that? You know, like right this minute, you can say, I'm not going to allow that fear. And because I'm going to tell you this, what's on the other side is amazing. Okay. The collateral damage of trying is huge. Number one, regret. If you hadn't quit your job and started this podcast, the immense amount of regret you would have had, you know, you would have been on your, you know, deathbed saying, I wish I would have done it. This book, if I didn't write this book, I definitely would have regretted it till the day I died. I knew that it was my message to give. I kept waiting 20 years. No one else is writing this book. You know, no one else sees how strong this trying mindset is keeping us back. I'm like, it's my message. I have to do it. So collateral damage is obviously you can live with the regret. And then you hiding, you know, missing out on relationships. It's probably more in your head than theirs, I'm sure.
I'm sure it is. Yeah.
Of all the people that you're avoiding. So, you know, my advice to you is like, just dive in. We have to face fear. To me, it's very exciting. I think doing something I've never done and failing is the greatest thing in the whole world. Because if you look at anybody that you know, if it was your kids or your best friend or your wife, and they go and attempt to do something and then they fail, you're proud of them. At least you did it. You know, you put your hat in the ring. And I think that, you know, when you can just really become comfortable with the failure and then you get proud of yourself, like, wow, even though I failed, I know I did it. And then you have greater self-esteem and you want to go do the next thing. There's so many good things that come out of being stuck in the try mode and moving into do mode.
Let's talk about the neuroscience behind this, because your book talks about this, the way that the it's kind of like rewiring the brain a little bit, right? Is what you're talking about in this book. But what is it in the brain that is happening in tri-mode? What is happening in the brain when you're in action mode? I know the book gets into this. I just haven't gotten to that part of the book yet.
Okay. So when you say, I'm going to try to do anything, your brain is listening and it's physically, it lights up. They have images. You can Google an image of the brain when it's trying. And it's on a very low hum. It's a low level lit. You've got, you know, dopamine and serotonin and adrenaline and all that going on. And so on a very low level, it's like you're in neutral. Okay. You're not in park anymore. Now you're in neutral. So it's like, not really going anywhere, but the motor's running. When you say, I'm doing this, your brain knows that there's going to be action forthcoming and it lights up really bright and you get big hits of dopamine, serotonin, adrenaline, all those feel-good endorphins. Your brain listens and it's physically going to respond differently to what you tell it to do. It's amazing. It's incredible.
You know, there's an issue of stress here too, right? Because when you are in this sort of idling loop, I guess you could call it then, right? When you're in the tri mode, mm-hmm. I mean, it's taking you longer there. I mean, you can stretch out for years in that mode,
depending on a lifetime, of trying.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're really spending a lot of energy maintaining that rather than being in action mode. What does it do physically? I mean, maybe not even just in the brain, but what does it do physically to you?
Okay. And I'm going to tell you about a really fun thing called the Zeigarnik effect. That's amazing that you're not going to forget this yourself after this call. So what it does mentally to you, it's exhausting. Okay. It causes anxiety, stress. It's exhausting when you're constantly thinking of all those things that you've been trying to do. And then guess what? When you don't do them, you're sitting there going, I'm such a loser. I'm so lazy. You know, so Saturday afternoon, you've been saying, I'm going to try to clean the garage. And when you don't do it, instead of enjoying a football game, your brain is thinking, I should be cleaning the garage. So now you're really interrupting your joy, right? So here's this little thing. It's called the Zeigarnik effect. This is so fascinating. Our brain, when you make a list of no matter how long, 2 things, 3 things, 10 things, all the things you're procrastinating on, that's your try-to list. Our brain processes each one of those things as an open loop. So we have all these open loops in our brain. And the brain wants to close those loops. That's all it wants to do is complete the task. Imagine in your home, you have every light on in the house, every TV burning, your oven is on, the lights are on, and nobody's home. So all that energy is going and powering all those things and nothing's happening. That's what's happening in your brain. And all you have to do is do one task, complete one thing, and the loop is closed. And now you have more space, more calm, more bandwidth to complete the next one. This is why cliffhangers work. Well,
interesting.
It's so they know it. They know this science of our brain. Oh, coming up on, you know, Thursday is the cliffhanger. You know, we're going to finally get to see it. It's why you're talking about it all week and telling your friends, I can't wait till Thursday. You have this open loop going on. Radio stations do it all the time. You know, coming up in the next hour is boom. Your brain is storing that. Kids, when they cram for a test, they get all this information. But once the test is over, they forget all that information because it's gone. It is, and so you are overloading your brain with all these open loops and all that energy that the brain is putting every day is exhausting you and filling you with all this unnecessary energy that if you just close the loop, finish the task, you know how good you feel when you clean the garage. I saw you laugh.
It's funny that you say this because I'm going to tell you a really not great story about myself. Okay.
Okay.
So I lived in Minnesota for 23 years before we came down here to Waco. And for the first 21 years that I lived in this house, I never cleaned the garage. I mean, and it was piled with, the inside of the house was fine. My office was very cluttered. same sort of issue, right? I just procrastinated. Then the pandemic hit and I got cabin fever and I needed to do something because I couldn't just sit around.
Yeah.
And I ended up getting, I don't know if you guys know what the bagsters are from Waste Management, the big green canvas things. You buy them at the hardware store, fill them up. So you don't have to rent a dumpster, basically. And then Waste Management comes around, picks it up and hauls it off. I filled two of those things, two of them from my garage. I cleaned it out to it was an unfinished garage, right? So it's got the studs, right?
Beams.
I cleaned it out to the studs. There was nothing on the floor. I hadn't been able to park two cars. I didn't have two cars, but I hadn't been able to park two cars in that garage forever. And so, you know what I ended up doing with it is during the pandemic, we would have, because you weren't supposed to be inside the house with other families, we would do, I'd have people over and we'd do dinner inside the garage. Love just it. Leave the door open, just roll up the door and I'd have a table out there, chairs, and we'd serve dinner out there. And it was great. But I did feel good about that. And I did make sure that I invited everybody over to see what my garage actually looked like.
Yes. And I bet like the day you cleaned the garage before you went to bed, you probably went and opened the door and looked at it like, oh my gosh, this is so great.
Yes.
Yes, I know.
It's almost like you were there, Carla.
Because I know this mentality. And let me tell you, you kind of want to keep doing that over and over again because you know how good it feels. Now, here's a little twist on what I said about all those feel-good neurotransmitters. The brain doesn't know the difference whether you're talking about doing something and actually doing it. It can't tell the difference. So if I say to you, oh, you've got like some spider crawling on your head right now, it's not there, but you're going to want to itch it and touch your head, right? Because your brain is thinking, oh, there's something crawling. Okay. So when you see the person at the holiday party every year or a family member or a really good friend, and year after year, they're like, yeah, I'm restoring my father's car in the garage. I'm trying to get it done. I'm trying to write my book. I'm trying to build my brand. I'm trying to whatever it is. In that moment that they're telling you, they're standing before you, it could be a stranger wherever you are in a nightclub, and they're telling you all the things they're trying to do. They're getting hits of all those feel-good neurotransmitters, the dopamine, the serotonin, the adrenaline in that moment. And sadly, this is who I want to talk to the most, that feeling is very short-lived. And when they're just talking about what they're trying to do and they're feeling good, that for some people, that's enough for them. They're getting the hit from that.
Yeah.
But what happens when next year you're at the same party and you haven't done it, or, a week later or a month later, that's when the negative self-talk sets in. I'm a loser. It's never going to happen for me. I can't do this. I'm all talk, no action. Horrible, horrible. So we have to be careful with the words that we use, what we're saying, and our intention behind them. You don't want to be that person that's stuck, fooling yourself and tricking yourself.
And that's a good reason to know what the science is behind this so that you can recognize those patterns and understand that you are tricking yourself to a certain degree. And while that may make you feel good in the short run, you're really cheating yourself when you employ those strategies, right?
100%. That's it. It's going to trick and fool you.
All right. So there are exercises in this book. So there's homework, but they're good exercises. They're fun. They're fun exercises. But I mean, you can, so it does, you do probably going to be doing some journaling, and then there's some online resources that go with this. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the online resources that go with this?
Okay. So great. So yeah. And the book is a quick read, by the way. I wrote it intentionally so that you could open it up on a flight from LA to New York and close the book and get off that plane like a whole new person. And I have seen this change a life in 24 hours, more than one, like literally in 24 hours. That's a great story. I don't know if we have time, but if you
want to tell it, feel free. I mean, we're open-ended here. So if you want to tell a story, feel free to tell a story.
I do want to tell the story because it illustrates how quickly this works. Okay. It illustrates everything about it. And I'll do that in a second. So in the book, there's a wonderful thing, and it's called the Eisenhower Matrix. President Eisenhower was really, really well known for his exceptional and extraordinary organizational skills.
Yes.
So if you're a person that has all these things on your to-do list, you know, where do I begin? What's the first thing I do? What, you know, how do I prioritize this? The Eisenhower Matrix, which is downloadable on my website and in the book, it lets you actually put in there the urgency. Is it urgent or non-urgent? Is it something I have to do now, or can I delegate it? Can I delete it? Like, it's just really helps it get it out of your brain where it feels overwhelming and then you don't do anything, to really help you organize. And then there's another one called the wellness wheel, which I really love. What parts of your life are really lacking? Where are you trying the most in your life? Because you may be a very successful podcaster or executive in a big company, but you're not able to have a relationship. You've been trying to find a relationship. Like, you know, you may be the most incredible rock star, but have a terrible issue with your blood pressure and you've been trying to get it, like, it, you know. So we all have areas of our life. Oprah Winfrey is like the gazillionaire billionaire who can get anybody on the phone, the most successful woman on the planet, I would say. But she tried to lose weight for her whole life until, you know, there were other ways she could lose the weight. So we all try. So there's the Zygarnik effect and that, and then there was the Eisenhower Matrix, the wellness wheel. There's a lot of tools that we can use that are fun and quick. Okay, so here's the greatest story. And when you use the book and do the tools, it's so fast. Like, when you get that message, you when you get it, it clicks. Wow, I have been trying here and doing here. Why am I trying here and doing here? What's my reasons and how is it hurting me? And then now you have a choice to change your action. So when the kids were in school, this is probably 15 years ago, I would drop them off at the school bus, and it was at the park, and it was exactly 7 a.m. every day. And yep. I'd take them to the park. Then I'd take the dog for a walk, and I would see this guy walking around the park every day. He had giant headphones on, like huge, not little ear pods, huge headphones. And I always wondered, like, you know, what's he listening to? I was in the music business. Is he listening to Five for Fighting? Like, you know, what's going on? So I could never interrupt him. He was really heavy into his listening. And one day the kids got on the bus and he had the headset off. He was like fiddling with it. And I'm like, now's my chance. So I went up to him and I'm like, I see you here all the time. I'm so curious. What are you listening to? And he said, oh, I'm listening to like podcasts on self-help and motivation. There's so many things that I'm trying to do that I just don't seem to get done. I hear the try word and I'm like, ding, 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 ding. I'm just totally triggered. And I just looked at this guy and I said, tell me one thing that you're trying to do. One thing. And he said, well, I'm trying to get back into swimming. I need to get healthy and I love swimming and we have a brand new pool at the YMCA. So I'm trying to go swim. And I just looked at him and said, why don't you stop trying to go swim and go swim? And that was it. And he's like, thank you very much. Headphones on. I'm like, I'm never going to see this guy again. I've just freaked him out. I've ruined this beautiful park. He loves it here. He's never coming back. And the next day, 24 hours later, 7 a.m. bus, I pull up, the dog jumps out. This guy is across the park waiting. He's screaming, I did it. I did it. I didn't try. I swam. Wow. And I interviewed him for the book. He's still swimming. He quit his job, changed jobs. He's not trying anymore. So the thing is, this was the trying, the thinking about, worrying about, wondering about, waiting for the motivation. When the trick was, don't do that. That's the trying. Go do it. Do it. It was, right. It transformed his life. And I just love that story because it embodies all of that good stuff.
That is a great story. And I am really glad that you chose to tell that story. It's a great story. And so you interviewed him for the book. Are you guys still in touch with each other? Are you?
He lives in the neighborhood. You know, I reached out to him. I wanted to make sure I could use his name and tell the story. So, yeah, I just wanted to check in with him, and I'm sure we'll get together again at some point. But he was someone that really got it, like, immediately. And it not only got him back in the pool, but it cascaded into other parts of his life, which I think is amazing.
And I think this is maybe like the final point, because we do want people to buy the book. We don't want to give away all the secrets. You want to buy Carla's book, Stop Trying, The Life Transforming Power of Trying Less and Doing More. But I mean, I think this is the key to what you're trying to get at, is that this is really
the key to what I'm getting at.
Thank you. Yeah, see, it's so easy to use the word try. The key to what you're getting at is that this actually restructures your entire thought process and reorients you to action. Not rash action. Nobody's saying go out and jump off a bridge, you know, or, you know, bungee jump off of something. I mean, that's, unless you really want to do that. You know, if you really want to bungee jump off of something, you know, do a little research first.
Do it safely.
Do it safely, yes. Find somebody who knows what they're doing with it and give it a try. But it is. It's a restructuring thing. So this is not just about the one thing. This is about the whole thing. This is a holistic. If you do it right, it will be a holistic change.
Absolutely. It affects everything. Your career, your relationship, your health, every day. Every day, if you start doing all those things that you're procrastinating, you're going to have more time. You're going to be calmer. You're going to be more confident. You're going to just feel happier. Like, why, in my life, in my brain, I'm like, why bother to try anything? Just go do it or choose not to do it, which is stronger than saying you're going to try and fail and not do it. Just choose not to do it. Like, empower yourself one way or the other. And just Yoda, you know, he's the little green guy that said there is no try.
Do or do not.
And what people don't realize is the more important line before that in the movie, the thing he says right before he delivers that iconic line that's on posters is, you must unlearn what you have learned.
That's exactly what this is. Introduction.
Yes, it's in there.
Notice it says a new path, not a new hope. It's Star Wars, folks. It's not a new hope. I'm sorry.
I love that. So, thank you. I forget what's in the book.
geeky, little interlude there about Star Wars. I actually laughed when I said that, because I was thinking of the more famous line when I heard about your book, Stop Trying. It was like, it's Yoda. And I was thinking, I don't want to say Yoda, because I don't know if that's actually a serious thing. And the very first thing I see in this is, it's great.
It is. You know, Nike doesn't say just try to do it, right?
Right.
That dilutes the whole thing. No, they're not encouraging you to try to do it for a reason. It's just do it.
Right. And if you fail, you learn. And the next time you do it, you'll do it better, or you'll choose to do something a little different and learn that way. So absolutely. Yeah. Well, Carla Andrasik, I mean, this is so much fun. Stop Trying, The Life Transforming Power of Trying Less and Doing More. Now, in the post, we'll have all these links. But if you would like to share whatever links that you want to share so people can find you, feel free to do it.
Okay. Yes. My website, so easy to find, stop-trying.com. Go there. When you sign up for the mailing list, you're going to get to take the Try Baby test, and you'll see if you're a Try Baby, which is like a whole chapter on that. You might be one of those people. Follow me on Instagram. Yeah. You might be a Try Baby.
I might be a Try Baby. Yes. I really might be a Try Baby. Yes.
Yeah. You're also a doer though. We're going to give you some props there. And then on Instagram, I do really fun, really great little posts that just keep the motivation and inspiration going, like examples about how trying hurts us. So Instagram, my email, I'm on Twitter now, X, whatever you want to call it. I'm a newbie there. and buy my book and online. I am going to be speaking a lot more. I've been on different podcasts that have different themes, and I'm just going to keep talking about this because the door is wide open now and the world has it. And I'm so passionate about sharing it.
You are very passionate. You're very compelling. And it's great to see you step into the spotlight here and be a real evangelist, I think, for this type of approach. You're going to help a lot of people. And again, the book is Stop Trying by Carla Andrasik. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it through her website. And we'll have the links in the post, as well as I think we'll have it on the screen. So, Carla, thank you so much for spending some time with me this afternoon. This has been great. And I look forward to talking to you again in the future. Maybe we'll follow up with this down the road, too.
I'll come back anytime. And thank you for having me. This was so much fun.
Oh, I'm good. I'm glad. It's so much fun for me, too. Yeah. Carla Andrasik, Stop Trying, The Life-Transforming Power of Trying Less and Doing More. We'll be back with more podcasts later on. Thank you.